All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Jay Jordan. We're going to go ahead and get started. So welcome to our inaugural quarterly conference call, where our plan is to give an update and an outlook on financial markets and the implications for your portfolios. As we continue to build out our capabilities across the Health Heritage platform, including those in the investment advisory services team, we're putting an even greater emphasis on communication. So I hope all of you have already had a chance to go to our newly designed website. This is the platform that we're going to drive most of our communication initiatives as we move forward. Over time, you'll see that there'll be an increasing amount of content on the website. So we would encourage you to visit regularly to see what's new. One example of a new communication within the last month is that we've begun posting every Friday topics for the week that have our attention and that we're discussing internally. We thought it would be helpful to share these topics with you. And they're posted on the website under the topic, quote, what we're discussing, end quote, with a link. So for today, there's an optional slide deck that's available on the website to support the call. If you go to www.heritagewealth.net and then you click on resources and then investment management, you can pull up the slides, but they're certainly not required to follow along. Today's call is being recorded. Everybody's line currently is on mute. When we get to the end of the prepared remarks, we'll open the call for question and answer. At that point, we'll give you instructions on how to register for a question. So with that, I'm going to turn the call over to Jack Kasperzak, who is our Director of Research.
Thank you, Jay. Good morning, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started with our presentation. Markets performed quite well in the second quarter, posting positive returns, adding to their year-to-date gains. The solid performance was broad-based across asset classes, regions, and sectors. Equities continue to lead the way, with the S&P adding approximately 3% for the second quarter, and the S&P 500 is now up 9% year-to-date. U.S. small and mid-cap stocks continue to lag large caps, but have still posted solid returns so far this year. The positive performance was not confined to the U.S., as the strongest returns came from international markets, a trend we saw start to unfold at the end of last year. Emerging markets have been the top performers to date. They added over 6% in Q2 and are now up 18% year-to-date. International developed outpaced the U.S. as well, up 14% in the first half of the year. In addition to equities, fixed income reported notably solid returns. U.S. core bonds, inflation-protected, treasuries, global bonds are all up mid-single digits. High-yield bonds and preferred securities are up even more. The biggest laggard so far this year has been commodities, which are being dragged down by the ongoing supply glut of oil, which pushed close to $40 a barrel during the quarter. Taking a look at specific sectors in the S&P 500, we saw pretty widespread solid performance as well. 9 of the 11 S&P 500 sectors have moved higher in the first half of the year. Technology continues to lead, up over 17% year-to-date, with healthcare not far behind. Telecom services and energy were the two laggards and the only two sectors down. In light of all the positives, energy is having a notably bad year, down 12%, again, as falling oil prices have really weighed on the sector so far this year. If you read our quarterly commentary, you saw that we were talking about this process of normalization. And when we talk about normalization, we're referring to a normalization of monetary policy, normal meaning higher interest rates, more robust economic growth, we're certainly seeing that in Europe, and economies that will return to more usual or normal business cycles. Yes, the U.S. economy has been in a long period of expansion, one of the longest on record, but growth has been slow, one of the weakest expansions on record, and one supported by extreme monetary stimulus, meaning very low interest rates. We believe the era of emergency monetary relief is coming to an end. It is already happening in the U.S., and it will start to happen elsewhere. In short, economies will start to behave more normally. Regarding interest rates, we are in the camp that the 30-year plus bull market in bonds is over. The yield on the 10-year Treasury bottomed out at 1.4% around this time last year, almost exactly to the day, and made its way above 2.6% earlier this year, currently sitting around 2.3%. The path of least resistance for interest rates in general seems higher, as it has been a gradual improvement in economic conditions over the last 10 to 12 months that has allowed the Federal Reserve to begin raising short-term rates, and that should ultimately drive up longer-term rates as well. Now, a potential concern is that higher interest rates will weigh on a variety of asset classes, including stocks. However, we would point out that historically, when the 10-year Treasury yield has been below 5%, rising interest rates have been associated with rising stock prices. And the lower the yield, the higher the correlation with positive returns. So when we're starting from a very low point and interest rates are rising like they are now, history suggests that stocks can still move higher. The most recent move up in stocks, both in the U.S. and abroad, has in large part been driven by a synchronized recovery in earnings. Earnings globally have improved. This includes Japan, Europe, and even emerging markets, which are coming off a five-year earnings depression. Forecasted earnings look solid as well. Earnings globally are forecast for double-digit growth through 2018, up 17% this year and 11% next year. Activity and the economic outlook remain strong and supportive of an improving earnings picture. There are many positive indicators that suggest the U.S. economy remains on a positive trajectory and still has plenty of room to run without gathering excesses. For example, manufacturers' new orders and industrial production are picking up, but remain below pre-crisis levels. The same for housing starts, accelerating but still well below long-term averages. U.S. consumer balance sheets remain in good shape. For example, household net worth has reached a new all-time high. Such favorable economic trends are not limited to just the U.S. The Global Purchasing Managers Index, PMIs, which is an indicator of the health of the manufacturing sector of the largest, most important economies abroad, have been rising. The U.S. PMI recently hit a multi-year high, but so did PMIs in the U.K., Germany, the euro area broadly, and even in Japan, which is enjoying its best run in GDP growth in 11 years. Many countries' PMI is at a level consistent with strong and continued economic expansion. So economic strength and resulting earnings improvement is fueling a rise across markets. After such strong gains, it stands to reason that valuation might be getting a bit frothy. Valuation can be part science, but also part art, depending on what statistics one wants to use. But if you stay with a conventional price-to-earnings ratio and base it on forward earnings, and given that earnings are improving, as we just stated, we think this is the right way to look at it, the S&P 500 is trading only modestly above its long-term average, currently 17.5 times earnings versus a 25-year average of 16 times. As mentioned, stock markets outside the U.S. have performed quite well so far this year. Interestingly, since February, the global forward price earnings multiple has actually declined by almost 4%. Earnings have improved across the globe, and this is boosting stocks. Given these factors, we remain positive on the outlook for equities, albeit with more muted return expectations for domestic stocks. After all, when your starting point is an above-average valuation level, even in a positive earnings environment, you have to have somewhat more conservative expectations for returns. In a period of rising earnings, still low interest rates, and no definitive excess in the economy, it's hard not to be constructive on equities in our view. So with all the good news we've discussed, one must ask, what could go wrong? The answer might lie on the path of continued normalization. Specifically, the labor market has become increasingly tight, with the unemployment rate now at 4.4%. This is good news. More people are working. Thus far, wage inflation has been modest, with wages rising just over 2% as of the last report. Wages have been trending up recently, but this is misleading, as much of the increase is a recovery from the depths of the financial crisis. However, economic acceleration from here could push up wages and inflation. Overall inflation, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, remains low, still running at a year-over-year increase of less than 2%. The deflationary effects of technology are clearly impacting inflation readings. The question for the economy and financial markets right now is whether we are reaching an inflection where wages break out due to a tight labor market and the Federal Reserve finds itself in a position where it must combat wage inflation by more aggressively raising interest rates. This would be a normal reaction by the Fed, but it has the potential to be bad for markets if it occurs. With little slack left in the labor market, the worrisome issue is that recessions become more likely when the labor market becomes overheated. With that, I'm going to turn the call over to Carrie Baronian, who's going to take us to the finish line.
Thanks, Jack. We are now in the 97th month of economic expansion, the second longest on record, and the 99th month of the current bull market, which started in March of 2009. The length of the current expansion and stock market run no doubt has many investors looking over their shoulder. With that said, we strongly urge against trying to time the market. We say this because, simply put, market timing is at best very difficult to do, and there is a lot of historical data indicating that investors have been broadly unsuccessful at it. It's not uncommon for investors to let their emotions get the best of them, particularly in tough market conditions. This often results in selling at or near lows and being on the sidelines when performance ultimately turns positive. For example, if you look over the last 20 years, 6 of the 10 best trading days occurred within 2 weeks of the 10 worst. In 2015 in particular, the best trading day, which was August 26th, it was just 2 days after the worst trading day that year. There usually is a pretty nice bounce off the bottom, so trying to time the market often does result in missing out on these inflection points, and that, of course, hurts investment performance. Instead of trying to judge when stocks are at their peak, we believe it's more prudent to focus on portfolio construction and risk management, so building out diversified portfolios, having a deep understanding of the overall portfolio mix, and understanding and monitoring the key exposures within our portfolios. It really is ultimately about building an asset allocation for each of our clients that's designed to meet their specific wealth objectives over the long run, staying disciplined, and making sure we have them positioned to be able to withstand periods of high volatility along the way. So stick with the plan. With that, I'll turn the call back over to Jack.
Thank you very much, Carrie. We're going to open the call up to questions now. If you would like to ask a question, hit 5-star on your phone, and you will hear a prompt that your line is unmuted when it is your turn to ask. So feel free to hit 5-star if you'd like to ask a question. So we have a question on the line?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, should I go ahead?
Yes, please.
President Trump's uncertainty about taxes and capital gains and taxes in general this year, how do you see that if this is ongoing and he can't cure the crisis with in the medical aspect and Obamacare, how does this play into your projection this year with the uncertainty that exists and the cloud that's hanging over this situation?
So that's a question we get a lot, of course, given the ongoing strong rhetoric about what's supposedly going to happen and with these various legislative initiatives. There are a few things I'd point out. Number one, the major beneficiaries of tax reform should be U.S.-centric small and mid-cap companies. And those sectors, as I mentioned earlier in my remarks, have lagged large-cap stocks. which typically have more international revenue exposure. So I think you see the market not really believing that that tax reform specifically is probably likely to happen. The second thing I would offer is that this is one of the reasons why we really focus on what's happening with the underlying earnings trends, be it in the U.S., take emerging markets where we talk about that region, that sector emerging from a five-year earnings depression. That's really what's carrying the day. The earnings strength, frankly, has been surprising. I think we would tell you if we were sitting here in February, it wouldn't have been as good as it is right now in our view, but that's obviously a positive surprise, and I think that's what's carrying the day for stocks. You mentioned healthcare, and I don't know if I think Jay might want to offer up some thoughts there.
So I think, you know, the question really revolves around just uncertainty in general, and I think that's where, you know, again, we would speak to a market that, in our view, is really climbing a wall of worry and climbing a wall of uncertainty. I think we would suggest that if we had more clarity around tax reform or around healthcare reform, that we would likely be seeing a market that's higher than it is today. I think what's driving the market today, as Jack pointed out, is the fundamentals on healthcare reform. You know, the question in terms of how that relates to the markets, if you look at the healthcare sector, the real question becomes, and the reason that you've seen strength was based on some concerns around what healthcare reform might look like and valuations, which reflected a potentially more challenging environment for the healthcare industry. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, but in the interim, what you've seen is an area of the market that's still in our minds is relatively attractively priced, where there's a lot of potential downside priced in, but not necessarily any meaningful upside.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think there are currently no other questions, so I want to thank everybody for attending today's call. Of course, Jay and I and Carrie are always available to answer any questions clients have offline via phone or email, so feel free to reach out. We'll be doing this call every quarter, shortly after the end of the quarter. And again, we appreciate everybody's attendance. Stay cool and inside today.